As soon as the load was dry, I'd pull my clothes out and get dressed. In the meantime, Helen showed me how to peel and mash the yams while she cut apples and onions into quarters and put them in the frying pan with butter. Like a fly on the wall, I kept myself quiet, listening to Ray and his mother chat while she put supper together. Frieda Green's house got broke into here about 4 months ago. That's when I had all them burglar bars put on. We had a neighborhood meeting with these two police officers, told us what to do in case of attack. Frieda and her friend Minnie Paxton took a self-defense course. Said they learned how to scream and how to kick out real hard sideways. The point is to break a fella's kneecap and take him down. Frieda was practicing and fell flat on her back. Cracked her tailbone big as life. Minnie laughed so hard she nearly peed herself till she saw how bad Frieda was hurt. She had to sit on a bag of ice for a month, poor thing.
Well, I don't want to hear about you trying to kick some guy.
No, no, I wouldn't do that. Makes no sense for an old woman like me. Old people can't always depend on physical strength. Even Frieda said that. That's why I had all them locks put in. Summertimes I used to leave my door standing open to let the breeze come through. Not no more, no sir.
Hey, Ma, before I forget, you have any mail here for me? I think my buddy in California might have sent me a package or a letter in care of this address.
Well, yes, now you mention it, I did receive something and set it aside. It come quite some time ago. I believe it's here somewhere, if I can recollect where I put it. Take a look in that drawer yonder under all the junk.
Ray opened the drawer, pawing through odds and ends. Lamp cords, batteries, pencils, bottle caps, coupons, hammer, screwdriver, cooking utensils. A handful of envelopes was crammed in at the back, but most were designated occupant. There was only one piece of personal mail, addressed to Ray Rawson, with no return address. He squinted at the postmark on the envelope.
"This is it," he said.
He tore it open and pulled out a sympathy card with a black-and-white photograph of a graveyard pasted on the front. Inside, the message read, "And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." Matthew chapter 16, verse 19. Thinking of you in your hour of loss. On the back of the card, a small brass key was taped. Ray pulled it off, turning it over in his hand before he passed it to me. I studied first one side and then the other, just as he had. It was an inch and a half long. The word "Master" was stamped on one side and the number M550 on the other. Shouldn't be hard to remember. The number was my birth date in abbreviated form. I said, "Probably for a padlock."
"What about the key you have?"
"It's in the bedroom. I'll get it as soon as Laura's finished in there." Supper was almost on the table when Laura finally emerged. It looked as though she'd made a special effort with her hair and makeup, despite the fact her grandmother couldn't see all that well. While serving dishes were being filled at the stove, I stepped into the bedroom and picked up my Swiss Army knife from the pile of my belongings on the bed table. I slipped the jacket from the cleaner's bag and used the small scissors to snip the stitches I'd put in the inside shoulder seam. I worked the key from the hole. This one was heavy, a good 6 inches long, with an elongated round shaft. I held it closer to the table lamp, curious if this was also a master. Lawless was stamped on the shaft, but there were no other identifying marks that I could see. Master padlocks I knew about. A Lawless I'd never heard of. Might be a local company or one that had since gone out of business. I returned to the kitchen table where I sat down and handed the key to Ray.
"What's that for?" Laura asked as she took her seat.
"I'm not sure, but I think it goes with this one," Ray said.
He laid the skeleton key beside the smaller key in the middle of the table.
"This one Johnny left taped to the inside of his safe. Chester found it this week when they were cleaning out the apartment."
"Those are connected to the stash?"
"I hope so. Otherwise, we're out of luck," he said.
"How come?"
"Because it's the only link we have. Unless you have an idea where to look for a pile of money 40-some years after it was hid."
"I wouldn't even know where to start," she said.
"Me neither. I was hoping Kinsey would help, but it looks like we're running out of time. he said, and then turned to his mother. "You want me to say grace, Ma?"
Why did I feel guilty? I hadn't done anything.
The supper was a lavish testimony to old-fashioned Southern cooking. This was the first food I'd had in days that wasn't saturated with additives and preservatives. The sugar, sodium, and fat content left something to be desired, but I'm not exactly pious where food is concerned. I ate with vigor and concentration, only vaguely aware of the conversation going on around me until Ray's voice went up. He had put his fork down and was staring at his daughter with a look of horror and dismay.
"You did what?"
"What's wrong with that?"
"When did you talk to her?"
I saw the color come up in Laura's face.
"When we first got here," she said defensively. "You saw me go in the other room. What did you think I was doing? I was on the phone."
"Jesus Christ, you called her?"
"She's my mother. Of course I called. I didn't want her to worry in case Gilbert showed up on her doorstep. So what?"
"If Gilbert shows up, she'll tell him where you are."
"She will not."
"Of course she will. You think Gilbert won't charm the socks off her? Hell, forget charm. He'll beat the shit out of her. Of course she'll tell him. I did. Once he started breaking fingers, I couldn't wait to unload. Did you at least warn her?"
"Warn her of what?"
"Oh, jeez," Ray said.
He rubbed his palm down his face, pulling his features out of shape.
"Look, Ray, you don't need to treat me like a nincompoop."
"You still don't get it, do you? That guy's going to kill me. He's going to kill you, too. He'll kill Kinsey, your grandmother, and anybody else who gets in his way. He wants the money. You're just the means to an end, as far as he's concerned."
"How's he going to find us? He won't find us," she said.
"We gotta get out of here."
Ray got up and threw his napkin down, giving me a look. I knew as well as he did that once Gilbert got confirmation of our whereabouts, he'd be here within the hour.
"I'm with you," I said as I pushed my chair back.
Laura was aghast.
"We haven't finished eating. What's the matter with you?"
He turned to me.
"Get your clothes on. Ma, you need a coat. Turn the stove off. Just leave this. We can take care of it later."
His panic was contagious. Helen's gaze was drifting around the room. Her voice was tremulous.
"What's happening, son? I don't understand what's going on. Why would we leave? We haven't had our ice cream yet."
"Just do what I say and get going," he snapped,
hauling her out of her chair. He started turning off burners. He turned off the oven. I was not dressed for flight. All I had on were my Reeboks and Helen's chenille bathrobe. I crossed to the utility room, nearly knocking his chair over in my haste to reach the dryer. Laura protested vigorously, but I noticed she was moving as fast as the rest of us. I pulled the dryer open, grabbed an armload of hot clothes, and headed for the bedroom. I flipped my shoes off, pulled on socks, bra, and underpants, pulled on my turtleneck and jeans, and shoved my feet back into my Reeboks, breaking down the backs. God, here I was again, going for the gold at the Throwing Clothes on Olympics. I put on my blazer and started jamming personal items in the pockets. Cash, credit cards, house keys, pills, picks. From the kitchen, Laura let out a shriek, followed by the sound of a bowl smashing on the floor. I moved into the kitchen while I crammed the last of the odds and ends in my jeans pockets. The room was dead still. Helen, Ray, and Laura unmoving. The bowl of mashed yams lay on the floor in an orange splat of puree and broken china. It didn't matter at this point, because Gilbert was standing in the door to the dining room with a gun aimed right at me. Chapter 17. Gilbert no longer wore the Stetson. His hair was disheveled, still bearing the faint indentation where the hat had rested. His pale blue denim jacket was lined with sheepskin, the fabric saturated in places and stiff with dark red.
"Marla sends greetings. She would have come with me, only she wasn't feeling that good."
At the reference to her mother, Laura started to weep. She made no sound at all, but her face got patchy and red, and tears welled in her eyes. She made a barely suppressed squeaking noise at the back of her throat. She sank into a chair.
"Hey, get up and get your hands up where I can see 'em."
The gun in his hand encouraged compliance. I certainly wasn't going to argue. Laura rose slowly, not looking at him.
She let out a breath with an audible sound, and tears ran down her cheeks. She'd brought this down on us with every poor choice she'd made. She'd taken the risk, and now the rest of us would pay. I saw everyone in the room with such clarity. Ray had his jacket on, his car keys in hand. He'd managed to hustle his mother into her coat. She stood close to her place at the table, hands up, bundled up in her woolies like a kid on a snowy day. 5 minutes more and we might have been gone. Gilbert must have been eavesdropping for some time, of course, so it probably didn't matter. The fact that all of us now had our hands in the air gave the scene a slightly comical air. It looked as if we'd been caught in the middle of a spiritual, with our hands waving toward heaven. In a Western, somebody would have jumped Gilbert and grappled for the gun. Not here. I kept my gaze pinned on his face, trying to gauge his intent. Helen's gaze wandered the room, eyes unfocused, settling nowhere, roaming across the gray haze with its motionless dark shapes. I thought she'd be confused or upset, but she said nothing, sensing perhaps that the situation wouldn't be served by questions. She did quiver almost imperceptibly, the way a dog trembles standing on the groomer's table. The air still smelled of fried pork chops and milk gravy. The remnants of the meal remained on the plates, cooking pots piled in the kitchen sink. Maybe Frieda Green would come in and clean up in a few days, after the crime scene tape had been removed and the premises unsealed. Gilbert held the gun in his right hand, using his left to reach into his jacket pocket. He took out a roll of duct tape.
"Here's what let's do," he said conversationally. "Ray, why don't you just take a seat in that chair? Laura here is going to wrap you up in duct tape." "Hey, hey, hey, babe, God damn it, quit the crying. Nothing's happened yet. I'm just trying to keep everything under control. I don't want anybody jumping out at me. Don't want this gun going off or somebody might get hurt. Granny's not going to look so hot with a hole in her head, brains all spilling out, Ray with a big old hole in his chest. Come on now, help out, just to show you still care." He tossed the roll of silver duct tape to Laura, who caught it on the fly. She seemed frozen, standing immobile as the seconds went by.
"Gilbert, I beg you—"
"Tape him up!"
I flinched at his sudden screaming. Laura didn't bat an eye, but I noticed she was now in motion, crossing the room to Ray. Slowly, hands still lifted, Ray eased himself into the chair Gilbert had indicated. Laura was weeping so hard I'm not even sure she could see what she was doing. Tears washed the makeup from her cheeks, exposing the old bruises like an undercoat of paint. Tendrils of red hair had come loose, trailing around her face. Gilbert's focus moved to Ray.
"Make any trouble, I'll kill her," he said.
Ray said,
"Don't do that. Be cool. I'll cooperate."
Gilbert flicked a look at me.
"Why don't you pass me the keys? I'd appreciate it," he said.
I reached for the keys still sitting on the kitchen table. I hated to let go of them, but I couldn't think what else to do. I placed them in Gilbert's left palm. He glanced at them briefly and then tucked them in his jacket pocket. Ray said,
"Listen, Gilbert, this is an old score. It's got nothing to do with these three. You can do anything you want with me, but keep them out of it." "I know I can do anything I want. I'm already doing it. I don't care about them two, the old bag and this one," he said, indicating me. "But I got accounts to settle with her. She ran out on me."
He looked over at her, frowning.
"Could you get busy with that tape, like I said?"
"Gilbert, please don't do this, please."
"Would you knock it off? I'm not doing anything," he said peevishly. "What am I doing? I'm just standing here talking to your dad. Go on now and do what I told you. Ray's not going to pull any funny business."
"Can't we just leave? Get in the car and go, just the two of us?"
"You're not done. You haven't even started," Gilbert said.
He was beginning to sound exasperated. Not a good sign. Ray's expression was soft, looking at Laura.
"It's okay, hon. Go ahead and do what he says. Let's see if we can keep everybody on an even keel here."
Gilbert smiled.
"My thoughts exactly. Everybody take it easy. I want his ankles taped to the chair legs, and let's get his hands behind him, bind him up nice.
I'm going to check on you, so don't you be thinking you can pretend to tape him up and then not do it right. I hate when people try to fool me. You know how I am. Blow your nose and quit sniveling.
Laura fumbled in her pocket, took out a tissue, and did as he said. She tucked the tissue away and pulled out a strip of tape, the adhesive making a ripping sound as she tore it loose. She began to wrap the tape around Ray's right ankle, first holding his pant leg against his shin, then threading the tape around the chair leg in several layers.
I want that tight. You don't get it tight enough, I'm going to shoot him in the leg.
I am,
she flashed a look at Gilbert, and for a moment there was pure fury in her eyes instead of fear. He seemed to like it that he'd gotten a rise out of her. A slight smile crossed his face.
What's that look for?
Where's Farley? She said darkly.
Oh, him. I left him in California. What a worthless sack of shit he turned into. All the mewling and pissing. I really hate that stuff. Here's the long and short of it. The man ratted you out. It's the truth. He gave you up. Farley told me everything, trying to save his own skin. I do not admire that. I think it sucks.
He edged over to the chair where Ray was sitting. He kept a close eye on all of us, making sure no one moved while he squatted by the chair and checked the tape. He got up, apparently satisfied with the job she was doing.
When you get done with him, you can do her, he said, meaning me.
She ripped off another length of tape and began to secure Ray's left leg to the chair rung.
What did you do to him? She asked.
Gilbert stood upright again, backing off two steps.
What I did? We're not talking about what I did. I didn't do anything. It's what you did. You betrayed me, babe. How many times I told you about that? You just never learn, do you? I try, God knows I try, to let you know what I expect.
Farley's dead?
Yes, he is, Gilbert said solemnly. I'm sorry to have to be the one to tell you.
He was your nephew, your own flesh and blood.
What's that got to do with it? That doesn't cut any ice. Flesh and blood don't mean bullshit. It's about loyalty. Is that simple concept so hard for you to grasp? Listen, I want to tell you something. You can't blame this on me. Anybody gets hurt, it's on your head, not mine. How many times I told you, you have to do what I say. You're not going to obey me, then I can't be responsible.
I'm doing what you said. In what way am I not doing what you said?
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the money. I'm talking about Rio. Now see, right there, you didn't fly to Rio like you were supposed to, and look what went wrong as a consequence of your behavior. Farley, well, never mind. I think we said enough about him.
Helen spoke up. Like me, she'd been standing there doggedly with her hands in the air.
Young man, I wonder if I could take this coat off and set down.
Gilbert frowned, irritated at the interruption. It was clear he enjoyed getting all worked up, feeling righteous, expounding on the many ways someone else was at fault. Helen wasn't looking at him. Her gaze was fixed at a point to his right, where she was obviously mistaking the door jamb for him. Gilbert was momentarily distracted, amused by her mistake. He waved his arms.
Hey, over here, sweetheart. You must not see all that good. You've mistook me for a coat rack.
I see well enough. It's my feet give out, she said. I'm 85 years old.
Is that right? Arms getting tired, is that it?
Helen said nothing. Her roomy gaze was wandering. I kept scanning the room, looking for a weapon, trying to form a plan. I didn't want to put the others in any more jeopardy. His intention seemed clear enough. One by one, we'd be bound and gagged, at which point he was going to kill us. What could we do? I was closer to him than Laura was, but if I tried to jump him, he might go berserk and start shooting. I had to do something soon, but I didn't want to be foolhardy, acting like a heroine when it might put us in a worse situation than we were already in.
I'm going to set. You can shoot me if you don't like it, Helen said.
Gilbert gestured with the gun.
Take a seat right where you are. You can put your hands down for now, but don't touch anything on the table.
She said,
Thank you.
She braced her hands on the table and sank heavily in her chair. She shrugged out of her coat. I could see her flex her fingers gingerly, coaxing the circulation before she tucked them in her lap. Gilbert angled himself so he could monitor Laura's progress as she bound her father's hands with tape. Ray's arms were behind him. In order to have his wrists meet behind the wooden chair back, he had to lean forward slightly and force his shoulders into a roll. Gilbert seemed to enjoy Ray's discomfort.
"Where's the harness?" he asked Laura.
"In the other room."
"When you get done with that, bring it out here and let's see what we got."
"I thought you said tape her."
"Get the harness, then tape her, you fucking idiot," he said.
"There's only $8,000. You said a million," she said irritably. She set the roll of duct tape aside and moved into the other room. Personally, I wouldn't have dared to take that tone with him. Gilbert didn't seem surprised about the money, so I had to assume Farley had told him about the $8,000 along with everything else. Laura returned with the harness in hand. He took it from her, hefting it up onto the counter behind him. He glanced down at the contents, taking in the packets of bills. His gaze shifted to Ray.
"Where's the rest of the money? Where's all the jewelry and the coin collections?" "I don't know. I really can't swear there's anything left," Ray said.
Gilbert closed his eyes, his patience wearing thin.
"Ray, I was there, remember? I helped you guys hauling out all that cash and jewelry. What about the diamonds and the coins? There was a fortune in there, must have been $2 million at least, and Johnny sure as shit didn't have it on him when he was caught."
"Hey, not to argue, but you were 17 years old. None of us had ever seen $1 million, let alone two. We don't really have any idea how much it was because we never had a chance to count it, and that's the truth," Ray said.
"There was a hell of a lot more than this. 7 or 8 big bags. That loot didn't just disappear into thin air. The son of a bitch must have hid it. So where'd he put it?"
"Your guess is as good as mine. That's why I'm here. See if I can figure it out."
"He didn't tell you?"
"I swear to God he didn't. He knew he could trust himself, but I guess he wasn't all that sure about me."
I spoke up then, looking at Ray. "How do you know he didn't spend it?"
"It's always possible," he said. "I know he sent money to my ma. That was our agreement up front."
"He did what?" Gilbert said. He turned to Helen. "Is that right?"
"Oh, my, yes," she said complacently. "I've received a money order in the amount of $500 every month since 1944, though it did stop some months back, July or August, as I recollect."
"Since 1944? I don't believe it. How much did he send? $500 a month? That's ridiculous," Gilbert said.
$246,000, Ray interjected. "I took high school math up at FCI Ashland. You ought to try the joint yourself, Gilbert. Improve your grasp of the basics. Vocabulary, grammar."
Gilbert was still focused on Johnny's giveaway plan.
"You gotta be shitting me. Johnny Lee gave $246,000 of my money to this old bag? I don't believe it. That's criminal."
"I kept an account, if you'd care to see it. It's a little red notebook in that drawer over there," Helen said, pointing a trembling finger in the general direction of the drawer where she'd kept Ray's mail.
Gilbert moved to the drawer and jerked it open, pawing through the jumble of items with impatience. He pulled the drawer out altogether and dumped the contents on the floor. He reached down and picked up a small spiral-bound notebook, thumbing through it with his left hand, the gun still in his right. Even from where I stood, I could see column after column, dates and scratchy-looking numbers running crookedly from page to page.
"Son of a bitch," Gilbert said. "How could he do that? Give the money away!"
He flung the notebook on the kitchen table, where it landed in the dish of stewed tomatoes. It was Ray's turn to enjoy. He knew better than to smile, but his tone of voice conveyed his satisfaction.
"The guy kept $500 for himself, too. So what is that? After 41 years, that brings the total up to $492,000, Ray said. "Figure it out for yourself. If we netted $500,000 from the heist, that'd leave just about $8,000.
Gilbert crossed to Ray and jammed the barrel of the gun up under his jaw hard.
"God damn it! I know there was more and I want it! I'll blow your fucking head off right this minute if you don't give it up!"
"Killing me won't help. You kill me, you got no chance," Ray said without flinching. "Maybe I can find it, if there's anything left." I know how Johnny's mind worked. You don't have a clue how he went about his business. I found the kick plate, didn't I? Only because I told you. You never would have found it without me, Ray said.
Gilbert moved the gun away, his face dark. His movements were agitated.
Here's the deal. I'm taking Laura with me. You better come up with something by tomorrow or she's dead, you got that? Hey, come on, be reasonable. I need time, Ray said. Tomorrow. I'll do what I can, but I can't promise. Well, I can. You get that money or she's dead meat. How am I going to find you? Don't worry about that. I'll find you, Gilbert said.
Helen grimaced, rubbing one gnarled hand with the other.
What's the matter with you?
My arthritis is acting up. I'm in pain.
You want me to fix it? I can fix that in a jiffy with what I got in here,
he said, waggling his gun. He turned back to Ray. Helen raised her hand to attract his notice.
What?
Now I've sat down too long. Thing about getting old is you can't do any one thing for more than about 5 minutes. I hope you don't mind if I stand up a bit.
Goddamn, old woman, you're just up and down all over the place.
Helen laughed, apparently mistaking his homicidal wrath for mere ill-temper. I felt a bubble of despair rising to the surface. Maybe she was senile along with everything else. He'd kill her without hesitation. He'd kill all of us, but she didn't seem to get that. His threat sailed right over. Maybe it was just as well. At her age, who could tolerate fear of that magnitude? The anxiety alone could push her into heart failure.
Me too, for that matter.
Gilbert pointed the gun in her direction.
You can stand up, but you behave, he said. I don't want you running out of here trying to flag down help.
His tone shifted when he spoke to her, becoming nearly flirtatious. Patronizing might be another word, but Helen didn't seem to pick up on it. She waved a hand dismissively.
I'm afraid my flagging days is over. Anyway, I'm not the one you have to worry about. It's my friend Frieda Green.
At least she'd caught his attention. I could see him suppress a smile, pretending to take her seriously.
Uh-oh. What is it? Frieda some kind of hellraiser?
Yes, yeah, she is. I am, too, for that matter. My late husband used to call me Hell on Wheels. Get it? Hell on. Helen.
I got it, Granny. Who's Frieda? She likely to be popping in here unannounced?
Frieda's my neighbor. She lives two doors down with her friend Minnie Paxton, but they're out of town right now. Hasn't anyone ever said, but I think them two are sweet on each other. Anyway, we had us a rash of burglaries about 4 months back. That's what they call them. A rash, like somebody caught a disease. Two nice policemen come down to the neighborhood and told us about self-defense. Minnie learned to kick out real hard sideways, but Frieda fell flat on her back when she tried it.
Ray fixed me with a look, but I couldn't read the contents. Probably simple despair at the banality of their exchange. Gilbert laughed.
Jesus, I'd like to seen that. How old is this old bag?
Let's see now. I believe Frieda's 31. Minnie's 2 years younger, and she's in much better shape. Frieda cracked her tailbone, and she got mad. Woo! Said there had to be a better way to fight crime than trying to kick some fella in the kneecap.
Gilbert shook his head with skepticism.
I don't know. Bust a guy's kneecap, that can really hurt, he said.
Well, yes, Helen said, but first you'd have to get close enough to kick, which isn't always easy. And then my balance is not that good.
Frieda's balance ain't good either, from what you said. So what'd she suggest?
She suggested we make us each a rack and bolt it onto the bottom of the table, where we could keep a loaded shotgun, about like this.
Helen turned slightly sideways as she rose to her feet. She took a long step away from the table, pulling up a 12-gauge side-by-side shotgun with 26-inch barrels. She pinned the buttstock between her forearm and her side, letting the buttstock rest on her right hip for support. The four of us stared at her, riveted by the sight of a gun that unwieldy in the hands of someone who, a nanosecond before, seemed so harmless and out of it. The effect, unfortunately, was undercut by the realities of age. Because of her poor eyesight, she was aiming at the window frame instead of Gilbert, a fact not lost on him. He made a face, saying,
"Whoa, you better put that gun away."
"You better put that gun away before I blow you to kingdom come," she said. She backed up against the wall, all business, except for the problem with her aim, which was considerable. The heavy flesh on her upper arms shook, and it was clear she could barely keep the barrel up, even if it was pointed in the wrong direction. I could feel my heart begin to thump. I expected Gilbert to shoot, but he didn't seem to take her seriously.
"Gun's pretty heavy. You sure you can keep it up there?"
"Briefly," she said.
"What's that weigh, 6 or 7 pounds? Doesn't sound like much until you have to hold it up for long."
He dragged out the word hold, making it sound exhausting. I got tired just hearing it, but Helen didn't seem dismayed.
"I'm going to shoot you long before my arms get tired. I feel it's only fair to warn you. The one barrel's loaded with No. 9 birdshot. The other's 00 buck, tear your face right off."
Gilbert laughed again. He seemed genuinely tickled by the old woman's attitude.
"Jesus, Helen, that's not nice. What about your arthritis? I thought you had arthritis so bad."
"I do, that's right. Affecting all but the one finger. Watch this."
Helen shifted the gun to the left, drew a bead on him, and pulled the trigger.
Kablam!
I saw a few bright yellow sparks. The blast was deafening, filling the room. A shock wave of air and gas spread out from the muzzle, followed by a faint donut of smoke. The mass of birdshot blew by his right ear, continuing on past him at an upward angle, shattering the kitchen window. Stray pellets tore his earlobe and the top of his shoulder, and the spreading fingers of the trailing shot cup raked his neck, painting it with blood. Laura screamed and hit the floor. I was down before she was. Ray's startled reaction tipped his chair over sideways. Gilbert screamed in pain and disbelief, his hands flying up. His handgun flew forward and skittered across the floor. The muzzle jump had knocked Helen back against the wall, the buttstock slamming into her right hip as the barrels whipped upwards with the recoil. She recovered and lowered the gun again, prepared to fire. Gilbert's right cheek was already peppered with red like a sudden rash of acne, and blood was seeping into the hair above his right ear. The air smelled acrid, and I could suddenly taste something sweet at the back of my throat.
"This time I'll blow your head off," she said.
Gilbert made a savage sound in his throat as he reached down and grabbed Laura by the hair. He hauled her to her feet, pinning her against him while he leaned down and snagged the harness with the other hand. From the floor, Ray craned his neck, straining to see what was going on.
"Ma, don't fire." "Pull the trigger and she's dead. I'll snap her neck," Gilbert said.
He was clearly in pain, breathing heavily, no longer armed but still out of control. He had his forearm locked up under Laura's chin. She was forced to hang on to him, pulling down to keep from being strangled. Gilbert began backing out of the kitchen and into the dining room. Laura was stumbling backward, half lifted off her feet. Helen hesitated, no doubt confused by the jumble of sounds and shapes. Gilbert disappeared into the dining room, plowing backward through the piles of junk furniture. Laura was making a series of chuffing noises, unable to vocalize with her windpipe choked off. I could hear a crash and the sound of glass shattering as he kicked the front door open. Then silence. I was between the desire to chase after Gilbert and the need to help Helen, who was trembling and deadly pale. She lowered the gun barrel and sank weakly into her chair.
"What's happening? Where'd he go?"
"He's got Laura. Just be cool. Everything's going to be fine," Ray said.
He was still on the floor, lying sideways in the chair, struggling to get free of his bonds. I scrambled over to him, trying to help him right himself, but with the awkwardness of the chair, he was too much for me to lift. I grabbed a butcher knife off the counter and cut through the layers of duct tape that bound his hands and feet. With one hand liberated, Ray started tearing off the rest of the tape, his attention still focused on his mother.
"Give me a hand here," he grunted at me.
"What's he going to do to her?"
"Nothing till he gets the money. She's his insurance."
I grabbed his hand and braced myself as he hauled himself up from the floor. He glanced at me briefly.
"You okay?"
"I'm fine," I said. Both of us turned our attention to Helen. The shotgun was laid across her lap. I crossed to her, took the gun, and set it on the kitchen table. Her shoulders were slumped and her hands were shaking badly, her breathing shallow and ragged. Her hip was probably bruised where the gun stock had kicked into it. She'd used up all her reserves of energy, and I worried she'd go into shock.
I should have killed him. Poor Laura. I couldn't bring myself to do it, but I should have.
Ray reached for a chair and pulled it closer to his mother's. He took her hand, patting it, his tone tender.
How you doing, Hell on Wheels? He said.
I'll be fine in a bit. I just need to catch my breath, she said.
She patted at her chest, trying to compose herself.
I'm not as feeble-minded as I was acting.
I couldn't figure out what you were doing, he said. I can't believe you did that. You started talking to him. I thought it was all bullshit until you pulled out that shotgun. You were terrific. Absolutely fearless.
Helen waved him off, but she seemed pleased with herself and tickled by his praise.
Just because you get old doesn't mean you lose your nerve.
I thought you had trouble with your eyes, I said. How'd you know where he was?
He was standing up against the kitchen window so I could make out his shape. I may be near blind, but my ears still work. He shouldn't have talked so much. Frida's got me into lifting weights now, and I can bench press 25 pounds. Did you hear what he said? He thought I couldn't even hold up a 7-pound shotgun. I was insulted. Stereotyping the old. That's your typical macho horse shit, she said.
She pressed her fingers to her lips.
I believe I'm about to get sick now. Oh, dear.
Chapter 18 Ray helped his mother to the bathroom. Soon after that, I heard the toilet flush and his murmured comfort and assurances as he tucked her into bed. While I waited for him to get her settled, I returned the contents of the junk drawer and slid the drawer back into its slot. I righted Ray's chair and then got down on my hands and knees to look for Gilbert's gun. Where had the damn thing gone? I raised up like a prairie dog and surveyed the spot where he'd stood, trying to figure out what the trajectory would have been when the gun flew off across the room. Picking my way carefully through the broken glass, I crawled to the nearest corner and worked my way along the baseboard. I finally spotted the gun, a .45 caliber Colt automatic with walnut stocks, wedged behind the East Lake cabinet. I fished it out with a fork, trying not to smudge any latent prints. If the Louisville police ran a check on him, it was possible an outstanding warrant might pop up and give them a reason to arrest him. If they could find him, of course. I placed the gun on the kitchen table and tiptoed to the bedroom door. I tapped, and a moment later Ray opened the door a crack. We need to call the cops, I said. I meant to slip on past, heading for the telephone, but he put his hand on my arm.
Don't do that.
Why not? We were keeping our voices down in deference to his mother, who'd had enough upset for one day.
Look, I'll be out in a minute, as soon as she's asleep. We need to talk.
He began to close the door. I put my hand on the door. What's there to talk about? We need help.
Please.
He held a hand up, nodding to indicate that we'd discuss it momentarily. He closed the door in my face. Reluctantly, I returned to the kitchen to wait for him. I found the broom and dustpan behind the door to the utility room, and I made a pass at the mess. Someone had tracked through the broken bowl of mashed yams. There were little yammy footprints, like dog dew, everywhere. I pulled the garbage can out from under the sink and cautiously began to pick up shards of broken glass and crockery. I used a dampened paper towel to scoop up the remaining goo. The kitchen sink and the counter were both littered with broken glass where the window had been shattered by the shotgun blast. I couldn't believe the neighbors hadn't come running. Cold air was now blowing in, but there was nothing I could do about it. I hauled out the ancient canister vacuum cleaner and affixed the upholstery attachment to the hose. I flipped it on and spent several minutes huffing up all the glass in sight. Between chasing and being chased, all I'd done since I'd left home was dust and vacuum. I put my ear to the bedroom door at one point and could have sworn I heard Ray talking on the phone. Ah, maybe he had paid attention to my advice after all. Ray came back into the kitchen and closed the bedroom door behind him. He moved straight to the pantry and pulled out a bottle of bourbon, took down 2 small jelly glasses, and poured us both a stiff drink. He handed one glass to me and then tapped mine in a toast. While I eyed mine, he tilted his head back and downed his portion. I took a deep breath and tossed mine down my throat, unprepared for the vile fire that assailed my esophagus. I could feel my face flush with heat as my stomach burst into flames. After that, I could feel all the tension drift away from me like smoke. I shook my head, shuddering, as a worm of revulsion wiggled down my frame. Yuck, I hate that. I could never be a drunk. How can you do that, just toss it back that way?
Takes practice, he said.
He poured himself another glass and tossed it after the first.
This is one thing I missed in prison.
He spotted the Colt where I'd laid it on the kitchen table, picked it up without comment, and tucked it in his waistband. Thanks, Ray. Now you've messed up any fingerprints.
Nobody's going to run prints, he said.
Really? What makes you say that? He ignored the question. He moved into the dining room and hustled up a cardboard carton, which he emptied, then flattened, and used to replace the broken window glass, securing it with Gilbert's duct tape. The outdoor light was diminished, and the cold still seeped in, but at least birds and small UFOs would be prevented from flying in the gaping hole. While I looked on, he began to empty the sink of its mountain of pots and pans, stacking them neatly to one side in preparation for washing. I love watching guys help around the house. I heard you on the phone. Did you call 911?
I called Marla to see how she was. Gilbert punched her lights out. She says he broke her nose, but she doesn't want to press charges as long as he's got Laura.
You could call 911, I said. Maybe he hadn't heard me right? I flipped the vacuum on again and sucked up glass slivers as they came to light. I kept waiting for him to pick up the subject, but he studiously avoided it. Finally, I turned the machine off and said, "So what's the deal? Why not call the cops? Laura's been kidnapped. I hope you don't think you're going to do this on your own."
"I told you, Marla's not interested. She thinks it's premature."
"I'm not talking about Marla. I'm talking about you."
"Let's look for the money first. Nothing turns up in a day, then we can bring the cops into it."
"Ray, you're crazy. You need help."
"I can handle it."
"That's bullshit. He's going to kill her."
"Not if I can find the money."
"How are you going to do that?"
"I don't know yet."
He tied an apron around his waist. He put the stopper in the drain and turned on the hot water. He picked up the liquid detergent and squirted a solid stream into the sink, holding his injured fingers away from the water. A mountain of white suds began to pile up, into which he tucked plates and silverware.
"I learned to wash dishes when I was 6, he said idly,
picking up a long-handled brush.
"Ma stood me up on a wooden milk crate and taught me how to do it right. It was my chore from then on. In prison they use these big industrial machines, but the principle's the same. All us old cons know how to make ourselves useful, but these new punks coming in can't do a damn thing except fight. Dopers and gangbangers. Scary bunch."
"Ray."
"Remind me of fighting cocks. All puffed up and aggressive. Don't give a shit about anything. Those are kids bred to die. They have no hope, no expectations. They got attitude. It's all attitude. Insist on respect without ever doing anything to earn it. Half of them don't even know how to read."
"Make your point," I said.
"There's no point. I changed the subject. The point is, I don't want to call the cops."
"Is there a problem?"
"I don't like cops."
"I'm not asking you to form any kind of lasting relationship," I said. I watched him.
"What is it?"
"There's something else." He rinsed a dinner plate and placed it in the rack, avoiding my gaze. I picked up a dish towel and began to dry while he washed.
"Ray?"
He put the second dinner plate in the rack.
"I'm in violation."
I'm thinking, violation? I said, "Of what?" He shrugged slightly. The penny dropped.
"Parole?
You violated parole?"
"Something like that."
"But what exactly?"
"Well, actually, exactly as I walked off."
"Escaped?"
"I wouldn't call it escape. It was a halfway house."
"But you weren't supposed to leave. You were still an inmate, weren't you?"
"Hey, there wasn't any fence. It's not like we were locked in our cells at night. We didn't even have cells. We had rooms," he said. "So it's more like I'm away without leave." "Yeah, like that. AWOL."
"Oh, boy," I said. I let out a big breath and considered the implications. "How'd you get a driver's license?"
"I didn't. I don't have one."
"You've been driving without?" "How'd you manage to rent a car without a driver's license?"
I didn't.
I closed my eyes, wishing I could lie down on the floor and take a nap. I opened my eyes again.
You stole the rental car?
I couldn't help it. I know my tone was accusatory, but this was largely because I was accusing him.
Ray's mouth pulled down. I guess you'd say that. So here's the deal. We call the cops, they'll run a check on me, and back I go. Big time.
You'd risk your daughter's life just to avoid going back to jail?
It's not just that.
Then what? He turned and looked at me, his hazel eyes as clear as water.
How am I going to deal with Gilbert if I got a bunch of cops on the scene?
Ray, you gotta trust me. It's not worth it. You'll be locked up for the rest of your life.
What rest? I'm 65 years old. How much time do I have?
Don't be dumb. You got years. Take a look at your mom. You're going to live to be 100. Don't blow this.
Kinsey, listen up. Here's the truth, he said. We call the cops. You know what's going to happen. We go down to the jail. We fill out paperwork. They ask us a bunch of questions I don't want to answer. Either they run a check on me or they don't. If they run a check, I'm history, and that's the end of her. If they don't run a check, what difference does it make? We're still fucked. Hours are going to pass, and then what? It'll turn out the cops can't do shit. Oh, too bad. So now we're out on the street again, and we still don't have a clue where the money's hid. Believe me, when Gilbert catches up with us, he don't want to hear excuses. And what are we going to say? Sorry, we didn't find the money yet. We got tied up at the precinct and time got away from us.
I said, tell him you're working on it. Tell him you have the money and want to meet him somewhere. The cops can pick him up.
Ray's expression was bored. You've been watching too much TV. Truth is, half the time when the cops get involved, they fuck it up. Perpetrator gets caught and the victim dies. You know what happens next? Big trial, publicity. You get a hotshot lawyer talking about the kidnapper's troubled youth, how he's mentally ill and how the victim was abusing him, and he only did the kidnap in self-defense. Thousands and thousands of dollars get poured down the drain. The jury ends up hung and the guy takes a walk. Meanwhile, Laura's dead and I'm back in jail again. So who wins? It ain't me, and it's certainly not her.
I could feel my temper climb. I tossed the dish towel aside.
You know what? You can do anything you want. This is really not my problem. You don't want to call the cops. Fine. It's up to you. I'm out of here. Back to California?
If I can manage it, I said. Of course, now that Gilbert's got the $8,000, I'm assuming you won't pay my return ticket like you promised, but that's neither here nor there. I don't have enough money for a taxi to the airport, so I'd appreciate a ride. It's the least you can do.
His temper rose in response to mine. Sure, no problem. Let me pull the kitchen together and we're on our way. Laura dies, it's on you. You could have helped. You said no. You got to live with that same as I do.
Me? This is your doing. I can't believe you'd try to lay it off on me. You sound just like Gilbert. He put out a hand and grabbed mine.
Hey, I need help.
For a moment we locked eyes. I broke off eye contact. His tone shifted. He tried coaxing.
Let's brainstorm, the two of us. That's all I'm asking. You got hours until flight time.
What flight? I've got reservations but no ticket and I'm flat broke.
So how's it going to hurt you to hang out here and help?
Well, I'll tell you, I said. It's 2 days until Thanksgiving. I'm in a wedding that day, so I have to get back. Two very dear friends are getting married and I'm a bridesmaid, okay? The airports will be jammed with all the holiday traffic. I can't just call the airlines and pick up any old flight. I was lucky to get this one.
But you can't pay for it,
Ray pointed out. I know that. He put a finger to his lips and looked significantly toward the bedroom where his mother was sleeping. I know I can't pay. I'm trying to figure that part out, I said in a hoarse whisper. Ray took out his money clip.
How much?
500. He put the clip back untouched.
I thought you had friends, somebody willing to lend you the bucks.
I do if I can get to the telephone. Your mother's asleep.
She'll be up in a bit. She's old. She doesn't sleep much at night. She takes catnaps instead. Soon as she wakes up, you can put a call through to California. Maybe your friend can put your ticket on a credit card and you can catch that flight. Look at me. I'll peep in and see how she's doing. How's that?
He moved to the bedroom and made a big display of opening the door a crack.
She'll be out any second now, I promise. I can see her moving around.
Oh, right. He closed the door again.
Just help me figure out where the money's hid. Let's talk about it some. That's all I want.
He held a hand out, indicating a seat at the table. I stared at him.
Well, there it was, folks. Altruism and self-interest going head to head. Was I going to take the high road or the low? By now, did I even know which was which? So far, almost everything I'd done was illegal, except the vacuuming. Breaking into hotel rooms, aiding and abetting escaped felons, probably even the vacuuming broke some union contract. Why bother to get prissy at this late date?
You are so full of shit, I said. He pulled out a chair and I sat. I can't believe I did that. I should have walked to the corner market and found a payphone, but what can I say? I was involved with this man, involved with his daughter and his aged catnapping mother. As if on cue, she emerged from the bedroom, roomy-eyed and energetic. She'd hardly been down 15 minutes, and she was ready to go again. He pulled out a chair for her.
How you doing?
I'm fine. I feel much better, she said. What's happening? What are we doing?
Trying to figure out where Johnny hid the money, Ray said.
He had apparently confessed all to his mother, because she didn't seem to question the subject matter or his relationship to it. At 85, I guess she wasn't worried about going to jail. From somewhere, another pen and a pad of paper materialized.
We can make notes, or I can, he said when he caught my look. You probably want to use the phone first. It's in there.
I know where the phone is. I'll be right back, I said. I used my credit card to put another call through to Henry. As luck would have it, he was still out. I left a second message on his machine, indicating that my return flight was in question because of cash shortages on my end. I repeated Helen's phone number, urging him to call me to see if he could work out some way for me to get on the plane as scheduled. While I was at it, I tried the number at Rosie's, but all that netted me was a busy signal. I went back to the kitchen.
How'd you do? Ray asked blandly.
I left a message for Henry. I'm hoping he'll call back in the next hour or so.
Too bad you didn't get through to him. I guess there's no point in going out to the airport until you talk to him.
I sat down at the table, ignoring his commiseration, which was patently insincere. I said, "Let's start with the keys." Ray made a note on the pad. The note said, "Keys." He drew a circle around it, squinting thoughtfully.
What difference does it make about the keys as long as Gilbert's got 'em?
Because they're just about the only tangible clue we have. Let's just write down what we remember.
Which is what? I don't remember nothing.
Well, one was iron, about 6 inches long, an old-fashioned skeleton key, a Lawless. The other was a master...
Wait a minute. How'd you know that?
Because I looked, I said. I turned to Helen. You have a telephone book? I didn't see one in there, and we're probably going to need one.
It's in the dresser drawer. Hold on a second, I'll get it,
Ray said and got up. He disappeared into the bedroom. I called after him. Have you ever heard of Lawless? I thought it might be local. I looked over at Helen. Does that ring a bell with you? She shook her head.
Never heard of it.
Ray came back with two books in hand, the Louisville residential listings and the Yellow Pages.
What makes you think it's local?
I took the Yellow Pages. I'm an optimist, I said. In my business, I always start with the obvious. He put the residential listings on an empty chair seat. I leafed through the pages until I found the listings for locksmiths. There was no Lawless in evidence, but Louisville Locksmith Company looked like a promising possibility. The big display ad indicated they'd been in business since 1910. We might want to try the public library, too. The phone books from the early 40s might be informative.
She's a private investigator, Ray said to his mother. That's how she got into this.
Well, I wondered who she was. I set the phone book on the table, open to the pages where all the locksmiths were listed. I tapped the Louisville locksmith display ad. We'll give this place a call in a minute, I said. Now, where were we? I glanced at his notes. Oh, yeah, the other key was a master. I think they only make padlocks, but again, we can ask when we talk to the guy. So here's the question. Are we looking for a big door and then a smaller one? Or a door and then a cabinet or storage unit, something like that?
Ray shrugged. Probably the first. Back in the 40s, they didn't have those self-storage places like the ones they have now. Wherever Johnny put the money, he had to be sure it wasn't going to be disturbed. Couldn't be a safe deposit box because the key didn't look right to me. And besides, the guy hated banks. That's what got him into trouble in the first place. He's hardly going to walk into a bank with the proceeds from a bank heist, right?
Yeah, right. Plus, banks get torn down or remodeled or turned into other businesses. What about some other kind of public building? City Hall or the courthouse? The Board of Education? A museum?
Ray wagged his head, not liking the idea much.
Same thing, don't you think? Some developer comes along and sees it as a prime piece of real estate. Doesn't matter what's on it.
What about some other places around town? Historical landmarks? Wouldn't they be protected?
Let me think about that.
A church, Helen said suddenly.
That's possible, Ray said.
She pointed to the pad.
Write it down.
Ray made a note about churches.
There's the waterworks by the river, school buildings, Churchill Downs. They're not going to tear that place down.
What about a big estate somewhere?
That's an idea. There used to be plenty around. I've been gone for years, though, so I don't know what's left.
If he was running from the cops, he had to have a place that was easily accessible, I said, and it had to be relatively free from intrusion. Ray wrinkled his forehead.
How could he guarantee nobody else would find it? That's a hell of a risk. Leave big canvas bags of money somewhere. How do you know a kid won't stumble across it playing stickball?
Kids don't play stickball anymore. They play video games, I said.
A construction worker, then, or a nosy neighbor. The place had to be dry, don't you think?
Probably, I said. At least the two keys would suggest the money isn't buried.
I'm sorry Gilbert got his hands on those keys. Gives him the edge if we identify the place.
Don't worry about that. I've got a set of key picks I dutifully tote with me everywhere. If we find the right locks, we're in business.
We can always hack through the locks, Ray suggested. I learned that in prison, among other things.
You got quite an education.
I'm a good student, he said modestly.
The three of us were silent for a moment, trying to get our imaginations to work. I spoke up again. You know, the locksmith who first saw the big key thought it might fit a gate. So how's this for a guess? Maybe Johnny had access to an old estate. The big key fit the gate, and the smaller key fit the padlock on the front door.
Ray didn't seem that happy.
How'd he know the place wouldn't be sold or torn down?
Maybe it was a historical landmark, protected by historical preservationists.
Suppose they decided to restore the place and charge an entrance fee. Then everybody and his brother could walk around the place.
Right, I said. Anyway, once they got in, they couldn't find the money sitting out in plain sight. It'd have to be concealed.
Which puts us right back where we were, he said.
We were silent again.
Ray said,
What gets me is we're talking big. 7, 8 big canvas bags loaded down with cash and jewelry. Those suckers were heavy. We were big strapping guys in those days, all of us young. You should have seen us grunting and groaning, trying to get them stashed in the trunk of the car.
I looked at him with interest. What was the original plan? Suppose the cops hadn't showed up when they did. What did Johnny mean to do with the money in that case?
Same thing, I guess. He always said the reason bank robbers got tripped up was they went out and spent the money way too fast. Started fencing silver and jewels while the cops were circulating information about what was in the heist. Made it all too easy to trace.
So whatever the plan was, he'd set it up well in advance, I said.
He had to.
I thought about that. Where was he caught?
I forget now. Outside town, on the highway, heading out in that direction somewhere.
Ballardsville Road, Helen said. Don't know why, but that sticks in my mind. Don't you remember?
Ray flushed with pleasure.
She's right, he said. How'd you remember that?
I heard it on the radio, she said. I was so frightened, I thought you were with him. I didn't know the two of you had separated, and I was convinced you'd been caught.
I was. I just happened to be somewhere else, he said.
How soon after the robbery was Johnny picked up?
Ray's eyes rested on mine.
You're thinking he stashed the goods somewhere between the bank downtown and the place he was caught?
Unless he had time to go to some other town and come back, I said. It's like saying you always find something the last place you look. I mean, it's self-evident. Once you find what you're looking for, you don't look anyplace else. The last you saw him, he had the sacks full of cash. By the time he was arrested, they were gone. Therefore, the money had to have been hidden some time in that period. By the way, you never said how long it was.
Half a day.
So he probably didn't have time to get far.
Yeah, that's true. I always pictured the money around town somewhere. It never occurred to me he might have left and come back. Shoot. I guess it could be anywhere in a 100-mile radius.
I think we should operate on the assumption that it's here in Louisville. I don't want to take on all of Western Kentucky. Ray glanced down at his notes.
So what else do we have? This don't look like much.
Wait a minute. Try this. The little key had a number on it. I just remembered that, I said. M550. It's close to my birthday, which is May 5th.
What good does that do us?
We could go to the locksmith and have him grind one.
To use where?
Well, I don't know, but at least we'll have one key in our possession. Maybe the locksmith will have some other ideas.
Ray said, "This feels lame to me. We're really grasping at straws."
"Ray, come on, you work with what you've got," I said. "Believe me, I've started